Chapter 6. Scene of the Crime. With Hondo tailing us like a stray dog, Summer and I set out for the Rhino House. We swung by the Gorilla Grill on the way. Rather, we swung by what was left of it. It turned out, Pete Thwacker wasn't merely leaving the wreckage out in the open for the crowds to see. He was advertising it. Starting at Fun Jungle's front gates, makeshift signs had been posted to direct tourists along the Elephant Stampede route. Guests could see where landscaping had been trampled and trees had been uprooted, but the collapsed restaurant was the main attraction. Despite the fact that it was a cold and raw day, a large group of tourists was gathered there, snapping pictures of their friends in front of the wreckage. Christy Sullivan, whom Pete considered the most attractive and personable member of his PR staff, had been posted there as well. Officially, she was supposed to be answering questions about elephants, although a lot of the male guests were doing their best to flirt with her. Christy always worked hard to learn everything she could about the animals, but she attracted men the way a dead animal attracts vultures. As we arrived, Christy was telling one of the male guests, "To answer your questions, one, in the wild, elephants can eat up to 330 pounds of food per day, and two, sorry, but I already have plans on Friday night." Before the guy could press for another date, she told him, "Excuse me, but I think those children have a question," then scooted over to us. "Hey guys, what brings you this way?" "Just thought we'd check out Fun Jungle's newest amazing attraction," Summer replied with a lot of sarcasm. "How's it going?" "I'm freezing." Christy clapped her gloved hands together to warm them up. "You'd think the elephants could have waited until April to stampede. But no, Pete's got me stuck out here in the cold while he gets to stay inside dealing with the rhino hunter." The moment she said this, Christy grimaced, then looked around to see if any of the tourists had heard her. Luckily, none had. She lowered her voice to a whisper and asked, "Have you heard any news on that?" "No," I said, "but we're heading that way now." "Daddy asked Teddy to help investigate," Summer said. "Really?" Christy's big blue eyes lit up. "Well, if anyone can figure out who did it, it's you," she told me. "You caught that koala napper when no one else could." "Thanks," I said, wishing I had the same confidence in myself that Christy did. Another young man approached Christy with a question, although it was pretty obvious he was only looking for an excuse to talk to her.
"Excuse me, but I wanted to know something about elephants," he said.
"I'll be right there," Christy told him, then sighed to us. "Back to the old grindstone. Good luck, and if you see Pete, ask him to get some heaters out here for me."
Summer and I continued on to Safari Land, using the same route to the Rhino House that I had taken with Atmani and my father that morning. Normally, we wouldn't have been able to get through the security gates with the keypad entries, but JJ had texted the day's codes to Hondo, who opened them for us. We entered the Asian plains to find a large herd of sambar deer grazing close by. They watched us warily as we passed, ready to flee at the slightest provocation. As we walked among them, Hondo grew as skittish as the antelope. "Is something wrong?" I asked him.
"No," he said quickly. "Everything's fine."
Summer leaned in close to me and whispered, "Hondo's afraid of animals." "All animals?" I asked.
"Pretty much. A few days ago, my guinea pig got out and ran over his foot. He almost had a conniption."
I glanced back at Hondo. It was hard to imagine that a man who was so tough around humans would be frightened by a bunch of deer, but he was definitely on edge. Every time one of them so much as flicked its ears, he would tense in fear.
"Why is he so scared by them?" I asked.
"City boy," Summer told me. "No pets as a kid. The only animals he ever saw were rats."
"Hmm," I said thoughtfully.
Summer started laughing. "What's so funny?" I asked.
"You're already going into Sherlock Holmes mode, aren't you? Hondo didn't shoot at Rhonda."
I looked back toward Hondo again, worried he'd overheard this, because that was exactly what I'd been thinking. Thankfully, he hadn't. He was too distracted by a few muntjacs. He was regarding them warily, like they were lions rather than deer.
"How can you be so sure?" I whispered. "He has a criminal background, and he doesn't like animals."
"First of all, he's a reformed criminal," Summer said, a little louder than I would have liked. "Daddy wouldn't have hired him otherwise. Second, not liking animals is a lame motive. And third, Hondo has the perfect alibi. Me."
Oh, you were with him this morning?
Summer nodded. We were having breakfast when the shot was fired, so he couldn't be our guy.
Guess not, I said. We continued on across the Asian plains to the Rhino House. Security had been greatly beefed up there. Honecker had stationed 3 new guards, one on each side of the building, while the third patrolled the roof. None of them was carrying a gun. That would have freaked out the tourists, and they were all dressed like keepers rather than security. But they were definitely on the alert, scanning in all directions for any sign of trouble. Rhonda was in her yard, happily devouring a trough full of hay, seemingly unaware anything unusual was going on. The gate that would have allowed Rhonda back into her house was closed, keeping her in the yard. However, the door that led into the house from the Asian plains was wide open. I could see Chief Honecker inside, on Rhonda's side of the metal fence, taking measurements around the point where the bullet had impacted the wall. The guard, posted at the door of the Rhino House, didn't seem surprised to see Summer and me. He held up his hand, signaling us to wait, then called out,
"Chief, they're here."
Honecker looked up and sighed heavily. Then he pointedly went back to his measurements without saying anything to us.
"Hey," Summer yelled to him, "my dad sent us to see you."
"I know."
Honecker jotted something on a small notepad, then climbed out of the rhino pen and came to the doorway.
"I understand you have a letter for me."
I handed him the envelope JJ had given me. Honecker tore it open, read the message inside, then crumpled it angrily and threw it on the ground.
"Apparently it's official," he growled. "In addition to conducting an investigation, I now have to babysit both of you."
He was so disdainful that if I'd been there by myself, I might have given up the investigation. But Summer stood up to him. "Daddy wouldn't have sent us here if he didn't think we could help."
"Yeah, your daddy's very proud of his little girl."
Honecker waved us into the Rhino House, then pointed at a corner.
"Stay over there and try not to mess anything up."
Summer reacted, offended. She wasn't used to people treating her like this.
"What could we possibly mess up? There's nothing in here but cement and rhino poo."
"This is a crime scene," Honecker told her. "Anything in here could be evidence."
I dutifully moved to the corner he had indicated, trying my best not to antagonize him. However, Summer had a point. Save for a few chalk marks that had been made around the spot where the bullet had hit the wall, the Rhino House seemed exactly the same as it had that morning. It didn't look very much like a crime scene.
"Have you learned anything yet?" I asked.
Even though I'd asked as nicely as I could, Honecker still seemed annoyed by the question.
"What do you think we've been doing here all day? Playing tiddlywinks?"
"You know," Summer said, "this would work out much better if you'd answer our questions instead of being such a jerk."
Honecker glared at her. I got the sense that if anyone else had spoken to him that way, he would have tossed them out the door, or at least chewed them out. But since Summer was the boss's daughter, she could get away with more than most people. So the chief swallowed his pride and reported what he'd found.
"We dug the bullet out of the wall. It had flattened on impact, but we were still able to determine the caliber. It was from a .375 Holland & Holland Magnum, which is relatively rare in this country. It's a big gun for big animals with tough hides. Use something like that on a white-tailed deer and you won't have anything left but the hooves. But it's very popular with big game hunters in Africa."
"Does that mean it's hard to get here?" I asked.
"In Texas?" Honecker laughed. "You can pretty much get any hunting rifle you want here. I checked around. There's quite a few stores in the area that carry them."
"Even though they're too powerful for deer?" I asked.
"Oh, there's plenty to kill here that's not local," Honecker told me. "There's hunting ranches throughout Texas, stocked with exotic animals. They've got all kinds of big game. Kudu, eland, water buffalo."
I was completely startled by this. "You mean people are raising all those animals around here just for people to hunt?"
"Oh, yeah," Summer said sadly. "They're all over the state. Go 100 miles from here in almost any direction and you'll find one. Daddy got a lot of our animals from them." She pointed out the door toward all the antelope grazing on the Asian plains. I leaned against the wall, trying to comprehend this. When I'd first moved to America from Africa, plenty of things had caught me by surprise. But by now, after 2 years, I felt pretty westernized. Every once in a while, though, something would still seem almost incomprehensible to me.
"So, they're places like this, only instead of raising all these animals to conserve them, they're killing them?"
Not exactly. The voice startled me as it came from behind us. I spun around to find that Admani had entered the rhino house. Hunters are usually big supporters of wildlife conservation, he explained. After all, if all the animals are gone, there's nothing left for them to hunt. There are many conservation areas in Africa that allow carefully managed hunting, as it brings in a great deal of money. And many game ranches in the United States have helped breed endangered species.
Which they then kill, Summer said pointedly.
Sometimes it's a necessary compromise, Admani said. You might think it's cruel, but then there are people out there who think zoos are cruel. No matter how much great conservation work is done here, they still look at this place as a giant animal prison.
It's not, Summer protested.
I'm only saying there are many sides to the conservation issue, Admani told her. So, I understand that the two of you are now helping our investigation.
Yes, I said.
First, JJ forces me to work with you, Honecker muttered to Admani, and now he sticks us with the Bobbsey twins here.
Admani ignored him and smiled at Summer and me.
I'm glad to have your help. The more minds we have on this, the better. He gave Honecker a pointed glance. Have you learned anything new?
I was just bringing the kids up to speed, Honecker grumbled. He sounded even more annoyed to have to share his information with Admani than with me, but he seemed aware it was pointless to defy J.J. McCracken's orders. You already know the bullet is from a .375 H&H. I've checked state sales records. Those rifles aren't plentiful, but there's still a couple thousand in Texas, so that doesn't narrow our suspects down very much, especially since the records probably aren't very accurate.
Admani sighed, seeming disappointed by this, then pointed to the chalk marks around the bullet hole.
And what's all this?
Ballistics, Honecker replied. By calculating the angle of the shot from the impact point in the wall and the hole in the window, we've determined the shooter fired from the roof of the monorail station. That's more than 100 yards away, which makes this a difficult shot, especially with a gun that size. Whoever did this wasn't an amateur.
Now that Honecker was distracted by Admani, I left the corner he'd assigned me, climbed into the rhino pen, and examined the spot where the bullet had hit the wall. Since the bullet had been dug out, the impact point was only a jagged spot of busted concrete. I turned and looked through the hole the shot had left in the window. Night was falling outside, but I could still see the monorail station clearly in the distance, silhouetted against the glowing glass dome of World of Reptiles. Sure enough, the roof of the station was in a direct line from where I stood. In the rhino yard, lights had come on automatically, so it still looked like it was broad daylight out there. Rhonda kept munching her food happily, ignoring everything else around her. I suddenly felt worried for her.
"Should we maybe bring Rhonda inside?" I asked. "If the poacher comes back, she's an easy target out there."
"Relax," Honecker told me. "There's no way that poacher got back into the park today. We greatly increased security at all the entry gates."
"But that wouldn't stop someone who works here, would it?" I asked.
"Maybe the poacher never even left Fun Jungle. If so, they wouldn't have to come back through the gates." "I have my men patrolling the park," Honecker said. "No one's going to take a shot at Rhonda with them around."
"Even so," Admani said. "Teddy has a point. We shouldn't be taking any chances with Rhonda. Why not bring her in now?"
Honecker glowered at me, annoyed I'd second-guessed him, but then gave in.
"Fine. I'm almost done here anyhow."
Admani turned to me.
"You need to clear out of Rhonda's space."
I nodded, understanding. Humans weren't ever supposed to be on the same side of the fence as a rhino. Even though Rhonda was gentle, an animal her size could still cause a lot of harm by accident. If I got caught between Rhonda and the wall, she could crush me flat. As I started to climb back over the mental fence, something on the floor caught my eye. It was a tiny, hot pink globule, wedged into a crack in the cement where the metal fence post was bolted down. I knelt and tried to pry it out, but the crack was too thin for me to even get a finger in.
"What's that?" Summer asked. "Rhino poo?"
"If it were rhino poo, do you think I'd be trying to pick it up with my bare hands?" I asked. Admani and Honecker both came over to see what I was looking at.
"Step aside," Honecker ordered me. "That could be evidence you're tampering with."
I did what he'd asked. Honecker pulled out a Swiss Army knife and pried the pink object out of the crack. It was a misshapen clod, not much bigger than an army ant. Honecker scrutinized it carefully,
then frowned. "Looks like dried mud."
"It's pink," Summer pointed out.
"Mud comes in plenty of colors," Honecker shot back. "Pink, red, orange, you name it. Usually when it's clay rather than dirt."
I nodded at this, thinking back to my life in Africa. There were lots of mud wallows in the jungle that had different colors. The rhinos loved to roll in them. Occasionally you'd come across one smeared red, orange, or yellow, like a preschooler's art project. I'd never seen a pink one, though that didn't mean it wasn't possible. However, there was another problem with Honecker's suggestion. "There's no pink mud in the Asian plains, though, is there?" I asked.
"The exhibit's a couple hundred square acres," Honecker growled. "I haven't analyzed every bit of mud in it."
"Mind if I see that?" Atmani asked, holding out his hand. Honecker dropped the pink glob into his palm, and now Atmani took his time scrutinizing it.
"Looks like mud to me, too," he announced. "Rhonda probably wallowed in it somewhere out in the Asian plains. Then it dried on her, and she rubbed it off in here."
"But Rhonda hasn't been out in the plains for weeks," Summer pointed out. "She's been in here, being pregnant."
"There's no way to tell how old a piece of mud is," Atmani countered. "This could have been wedged down there for a year."
"Can I look at it?" I asked.
"For Pete's sake," Honecker growled. "It's a piece of mud. It doesn't have anything to do with our shooter." He turned to Atmani. "You bringing that rhino in or not?"
"I am," Atmani said.
He dropped the pink glob in my hand, then motioned for me to get out of the rhino pen. I climbed over the rail, then took a look at the pink object myself. Summer leaned in as well. The pink thing certainly felt like clay. It was grainy enough that a little bit crumbled off in my hand. I even tried smelling it, but if it had a smell, it was overwhelmed by the odor of rhinoceros in the room.
"Could be old gum," Summer suggested.
"I doubt it," I said.
"Taste it," she suggested. I recoiled in disgust. "You can taste something off the floor of the rhino house if you want. I'll pass."
Meanwhile, Atmani opened the food storage closet. There was a great deal of hay inside, as well as a large plastic trash can filled with rhino kibble, and some smaller bins with fresh fruits and vegetables in them. Atmani selected a carrot, then flipped a switch on the wall. The gate between the rhino house and the rhino yard slid open. Rhonda's ears swiveled toward the sound, and she perked up immediately. Atmani waved the carrot in the air.
"Want a treat?" he asked.
Rhonda quickly abandoned her trough. She appeared to have licked it clean, and trotted into the rhino house. She probably hadn't been able to see the carrot at all. Instead, she had most likely smelled it. Rhinos have lousy eyesight, but their nostrils are big enough to inhale cue balls. In addition, Rhonda's upper lip was prehensile. It wasn't quite as useful as an elephant's trunk, but she could still grab things with it. Rhonda rested her enormous head atop the fence and extended her lip, reaching for the carrot, revealing her whole mouth. Her upper palate was almost as pink as the mysterious glob in my hand.
"Good girl," Atmani told her, handing over the carrot.
The rhino happily gobbled it down, creating a staggering amount of slobber. Enough drool to drown a chihuahua spilled out of her mouth and pooled on the floor. Hondo shuddered and took a few steps back from the rhino toward the door. Atmani laughed at his reaction.
"You're not afraid of Rhonda here, are you?"
"No,"
Hondo said, way too defensively. It was an obvious lie.
"Come here and meet her," Atmani offered. "She's gentle as a kitten."
"I got scratched by a kitten once," Hondo replied. "Needed 15 stitches.
"Rhonda doesn't even have claws," Summer pointed out.
Hondo shrugged this off and edged closer to the door. I held up the pink blob to give it one more look. Rhonda immediately mistook my movement, thinking I was handing her food. She suddenly lurched my way, thrusting her head over the rail as far as it would go, and grabbing my hand with her prehensile lip. Hondo shrieked in fear.
"She ate his hand!"
"She didn't," I told him. I'd actually been startled by Rhonda's sudden movement. It's always disconcerting to find your hand in a rhino's mouth. But I did my best to remain calm so Hondo wouldn't freak out. "Look, I'm okay." I held up my hand to show him. It was slimed with rhino drool, but it was still there. The pink blob was gone, though. Rhonda had eaten my evidence.
"Is there something I can dry my hand on?" I asked. "Come anywhere near my dress with that slobber, and I'll kill you," Summer warned.
"I always use my shirt," Atmani said.
There didn't seem to be any other option. While I was wiping my hand clean, Vicky Benbow entered the rhino house. Vicky was one of the evening keepers, responsible for making sure all the animals were housed and fed for the night. While she was great with the animals, she tended to be reserved and quiet around humans. She seemed startled to find so many people in the rhino house. She said, sounding embarrassed. I need to get Rhonda settled for the night.
I guess we should clear out of here, then, Atmani said graciously. He looked at Summer and me. Teddy, if you'd like, I can give you a ride home. And then take you back to your father, Summer.
That'd be great, Summer said. On a warm summer night, I usually would have opted to walk home through the zoo myself, but the temperature had plummeted with the darkness.
Sure, I said.
We all headed for the door except Chief Honecker, who hung back with Vicky.
I'd like to discuss the new rhino security protocols with you, he told her.
Vicky looked like this was pretty much the last thing in the world she wanted to do, but she nodded acceptance.
Okay, I guess.
I waved goodbye to them as we left the building. Vicky gave me a meek little wave back. Honecker ignored me completely.
I don't expect we'll have any more trouble with this hunter, I heard him tell her, but just in case, I'm going to have two armed guards patrolling the park tonight.
Admani's safari rover was parked close to the rhino house. Hondo pointed both Summer and me to the back seat, then climbed into the front seat, where he could keep a better eye out for threats. Once we were buckled in, Atmani slowly drove through the Asian plains. It was now dark, and he didn't want to run over any antelope. As we jounced along, I asked Atmani, "Do you have any idea why the bad guy shot at Rhonda?" Atmani met my gaze in the rearview mirror.
"Based on my experience in Africa, I'd say they were after her horn. Right now, Rhonda's would be worth around $500,000 on the black market."
"$500,000?" Summer gasped, stunned. "Holy cow! But Rhonda was locked inside her house," I pointed out, "so the hunter wouldn't be able to get her horn." "Unless whoever shot at her knew the entry code," Summer suggested. "We already knew they could get into Fun Jungle, so why not the rhino house, too?" "Then why didn't they enter the house to shoot Rhonda?" I asked. "Why shoot from way over by the monorail station instead of doing it from close by?" "Or why'd they go after Rhonda at all?" Summer added thoughtfully. "Why not one of the other rhinos that wasn't locked up last night?"
Admani sighed. "Those are good questions," he admitted. "I don't know the answers."
I looked from the monorail station to Rhonda's house. The distance between them was almost the length of a football field. The shot wouldn't have been easy. "Do you think Honecker's right?" I asked Atmani. "That we won't have any more trouble from the hunter?"
"No," Atmani replied. "I don't think Honecker believes that himself. If someone took a shot at Rhonda once, there's no reason to think they wouldn't do it again. And you're right about our other rhinos. They need to be protected, too. I've arranged for all of them to be housed indoors this evening."
"Where?" Summer asked.
"There are several other facilities, like Rhonda's house in Safariland. The other rhinos are all locked up safely inside them."
"But the hunter shot at Rhonda while she was inside last night," I pointed out.
"And they missed."
Admani pulled up to the gate for vehicles to leave Safariland. A sensor triggered it to open automatically.
"Unfortunately, we don't have any better place to put the rhinos. The best I can say is it'd be a very difficult shot to hit them through one of the windows, as we saw last night. They're certainly much safer indoors than outside, and the extra guards will hopefully frighten off our poacher."
There was a large space to pull into beyond the auto gate, with another gate on the other side. This was to ensure that, should one of the animals slip through the first gate along with the rover, it wouldn't be able to get past the second gate and escape into the park. Admani pulled into the space and waited for the first gate to close behind us.
"So all the rhinos now have as many guards as Rhonda?" Summer asked.
No, Admani admitted. "Fun Jungle doesn't have the staff to handle that. Your father is trying to hire more men, but it's not easy to find people we trust with weapons around the animals on short notice."
The first gate clicked shut and a green light came on ahead of us to tell us it was safe to activate the second. Atmani pulled forward and that gate began to open. I asked, "You mean you're worried the guards themselves might go after the animals?"
"If they're not carefully selected," Atmani said. "Though I believe we can trust the men we have here tonight."
The second gate opened fully, allowing us to drive into the employee area of the park. Hondo relaxed visibly now that we were away from the animals and surrounded by things he seemed more familiar with, like people and cement. Instead of staying in the employee area, Atmani veered through another gate, ending up on Adventure Road. Although this was the main pedestrian route around the park, cars could drive on it after visiting hours. And they did. It was the best way to transport the enormous amount of food the animals needed each day, or to remove the enormous amounts of garbage the visitors generated. At times it could be as crowded as a highway. Atmani weaved around a flatbed truck full of hay bales and headed for the employee housing area, where I lived.
"Will the new guards be permanent?" Summer asked.
"I'm not sure," Atmani replied. "Why?"
"Because if they're only here for a few days or weeks, maybe the poacher will just wait for them to stop working and then come back," Summer explained. "And what protects the rhinos then?"
"Yeah," I agreed. "We can't keep them inside forever, can we?"
"You're right," Atmani said. "Ideally, the best scenario would be to catch this poacher quickly. But if we don't, I've suggested an alternative way to protect the rhinos, but I can tell you it will be an uphill battle."
"What's that?" I asked.
"We cut the horns off," Atmani said.
Summer and I both gasped at the idea. My own reaction surprised me. After all, a rhino in the zoo didn't need its horn, but the idea of removing it seemed like a horrible act.
"That'd be like wiping the smile off the Mona Lisa," Summer said.
"The difference is no one's going to kill the Mona Lisa for her smile," Atmani countered. "I didn't say it was a great solution, but it's a solution. It has been done in many places in Africa. If you get rid of the horn, there's no reason for anyone to poach the rhinos."
"Unless someone's going after Rhonda for some other reason," I said.
"Like what?"
Atmani asked. "Wanting a dead rhino head to put on their wall," I replied. Atmani sighed.
"I suppose that's possible, but I think someone wanting the horn is more likely. It'd be easier to steal the horn than a whole head."
"Would taking the horn off hurt the rhino?" Summer asked.
"No," Atmani replied. "There are no nerves in the horn itself, but it is still not an easy job. A veterinarian would have to do it."
Atmani pulled over by the rear employee exit from Fun Jungle.
"Here you go, Teddy."
"See you tomorrow?" Summer asked me.
"Sure," I said. Normally, the idea of Summer asking to spend time with me would have been thrilling, but everything about the rhino was wearing me down. I climbed out of the rover and waved goodbye. Summer waved back as Atmani drove away. I left Fun Jungle and headed into the trailer park that served as employee housing, my mind full of questions. Was the hunter going after the horn or another trophy from Rhonda? Or, as my friends had suggested, were they looking to kill only for fun? But if it was for fun, why go after a rhino rather than any other animal? And if it was for the horn, why had the hunter gone after the one rhino that was locked up, rather than any of the others that weren't? Was this tied to the candy store theft in any way, or was that an entirely separate crime? As I wove through the trailers toward home, a thought nagged at me. I had the feeling there was something strange about the attempt on Rhonda that I'd missed, but I couldn't figure out what it was. I rounded the final trailer and froze in astonishment. In addition to all the other mysteries of the day, there was now one more. My entire house had disappeared.